Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
We're going to put Hong Kong in the spotlight tonight. In a week's time, July 1st to be exact, will be the 25th anniversary of Hong Kong's handover from Britain to China in 1997. Now, John Lee will also be sworn in as the new chief executive, taking over from Carrie Lam.
Now, the 64-year-old, who easily secured the overwhelming support expected from the group of electors that voted him into power in an uncontested poll, takes over a city that's still divided after the political and social turmoil of 2019, soaring housing prices and the handling of the COVID-19 pandemic that has resulted in the loss of 9,000 lives and the exodus of talent. To find out what's next for Hong Kong, Pushan Dutt joins us. He is Professor of Economics and Political Sciences at INSEAD. He'll be filling us in. Hi, Professor.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing good, Professor. Hope you are as well. Now, this year's vote for Hong Kong's chief executive, of course, the first since the electoral system was changed last year, to ensure that only patriots are allowed to run for office. And analysts and a lot of people on the ground are already calling John Lee Beijing's enforcer. What does this really mean for the city?
So the first thing to note is that, as you mentioned, he ran uncontested. So this is more of a Beijing-backed selection rather than an election, because he was selected by a patriots-only selection committee made up of pro-Beijing politicians and business people. So this is hardly representative of the 7 million people of Hong Kong. In fact, even if you step away from John Lee's election and look at the legislative election from December 2021, which was also a patriots-only election, the participation rate was about 30%, the lowest in Hong Kong history. So in my opinion, the election of John Lee essentially means that the old Hong Kong is on its way out, that the one country, two systems framework no longer applies, where people enjoyed substantial civil liberties and political rights under their local constitution. So Beijing Lit now has total control over the selection of local Hong Kong authorities. So what the last thing I want to say, what I found odd is in this election run-up, the local authorities actually spent 200 million Hong Kong dollars on John Lee's campaign. That's a lot of money to spend for someone who's running unopposed and for whom the support from Beijing was assured. So maybe GDP was contracting in Hong Kong and someone thought this was a good way to stimulate the local economy.
Professor, after looking at what happened in 2019 and how, well, Beijing is flexing more and more of its muscles and influence in Hong Kong, is it perhaps time to have a look at Hong Kong from a different perspective, a different lens, perhaps, that the one country, two systems is really out of the way now?
Yeah, I think so. That, you know, the Hong Kong's main competitive advantage was it was giving access to China. But because of COVID, that access has actually been cut off. It was also like a small open economy, a magnet for expats, for the financial sector. And that also seems to have been cut off. You know, it was a source for finance for many Chinese companies, a way for them to start accessing capital markets. But with deepening capital markets in China, that also is less of an attraction for Hong Kong. So, you know, trade via Hong Kong has also diminished for about a couple of decades now since China joined the world trade power. So basically, the entire landscape has changed. In addition to the change in the political landscape, there's been a change in the economic landscape as well. So instead, we're going to see more of the rise of Shanghai and building of the financial sector within China, and Hong Kong is going to be less important going forward.
It all sounds rather bleak. How exactly do you see Hong Kong fitting into the larger Asia-Pacific region and its place in this region as an investment hub, as a place that business people might look to? Because ultimately, it is still part of China. It can't be completely diminished.
Yeah, so, you know, if I had to summarize the challenge in three words, it's COVID exit strategy. So as long as they have all the COVID restrictions in place, both in China and in Hong Kong, both China and Hong Kong have to completely rethink their COVID policy. Initially, they were successful, and I think they put too much weight on that, especially in contrast with many Western Europeans and U.S. in terms of, you know, stopping infections. But infections is no longer the game. You know, the variants that we have are simply break the vaccine barriers. So what I find that, you know, they're still following the old protocol, whereas what they should be really focusing on is getting the older people and the sicker people vaccinated. So until and unless they get COVID out of the way, I don't see how anything sort of changes. And that's not going to change till the Communist Party has its big meeting in August. So we'll be in a holding position till then.
In many ways, it's unfortunate to think, but the COVID-19 situation actually played into the hands of what they wanted Hong Kong to be in any case, right? To be less significant in terms of the bigger country, China. Professor Dutt is professor of economics and political sciences at INSEAD. We're talking about the situation in Hong Kong tonight. Professor, local media reporting that new Hong Kong textbooks will teach students there that the city was never a British colony after an overhaul of school subject that authorities are blaming for driving the pro-democracy protests there. What do you think about all of this?
So there has been a steady effort to change the curriculum and textbooks, right? So this actually started in 2012 when Hong Kong school's curriculum was changed to foster a sense of Chinese national authority, which many residents saw as Chinese propaganda. So this is basically following the same playbook, and it's part of this broader strategy of getting China to identify closer with the mainland. Now, China actually put pressure on the United Nations to recognize that China never ever agreed that the Hong Kong was actually colony for the British. We have to keep in mind that the colonial legacy weighs very heavily on mainland China in terms of the Opium Wars, the Japanese occupation, and the British colonization of Hong Kong. But I'm always very skeptical when governments start fiddling with history and indoctrinating future generations. We have seen this in multiple countries, and this rarely is a sign of a confident government or a confident country. This is usually about a country turning inwards, becoming nationalistic. So the countries should be able to confront the past, even some of the ugly lessons of the past, and they should learn from the past and do better for the future instead of trying to change the past, because that leads to less action and to more inertia.
Now, John Lee has talked about uniting the city, and he acknowledges it's still divided after especially the political and social turmoil of 2019. What exactly do you think he means when he says unite the city? Because based on a lot of the analysis that we have seen, it seems that anyone who is pro-democracy is likely to try to flee the city, and then you'll have whoever is able to accept the current state of things stay behind.
Absolutely. So, you know, there has been not just outward emigration of expatriates who are actually very hassled by family separation, long quarantines and things like that, but we're also seeing multiple Hong Kong residents actually leave Hong Kong. And this is something which is going to be very, very difficult to reverse. So native Hong Kongers are emigrating to countries like Singapore, Australia, UK, Canada. So 2022, almost 100,000, close to about, I think, 94,000 Hong Kong residents have left so far this year. Now, you have to keep in mind, they stuck it through the political protests in 2019. They were there during the initial COVID crisis of 2020, but now I think they've sort of had enough with the no end to quarantines inside, the erosion of political liberty. So we have to keep in mind that a country is basically its people, and this will fundamentally transform Hong Kong. So it's not going to actually unite Hong Kong at all. And now what the new Hong Kong will look like, we can only wait and watch.
All right, Professor, we'll put you on the spot then. What do you see the best case scenario for Hong Kong after it recovers, if it will ever recover from all of this?
Might Singapore actually overtake the territory as Asia's main financial hub?
So there are two questions here. So the best case scenario...
we thought they were related, so...
they are related. So the best case scenario, unfortunately, for Hong Kong is actually good for Singapore, because it becomes like an opportunity for Singapore. So you keep in mind that, you know, what are politicians and central banks worried about? They're worried about inflation. They're worried about these wage price spirals. One of the ways to actually put a dampening effect on the wage price spirals is to allow for more liberal immigration. So Singapore has sort of like a unique opportunity, because Hong Kongers are migrating to the closer places rather than going off to UK, US, Canada, etc., because they think of that as more irreversible. So I think Singapore has a chance to actually become the financial hub of Asia. And we are seeing banks, etc., are actually moving, much of their operations and personnel here. Now, the financial sector, especially at the intersection of finance and tech, is actually very interesting, setting aside the collapse in stock markets right now. Okay. In fact, the markets crashing are like a disciplining device. It's a good time to identify what are sort of good bits. Singapore's big problem is one of scale, right? How do you scale up at, tap global markets? And therefore, a big constraint becomes talent and skill. And this is what Hong Kong offers. So the fact that Hong Kong is losing so much people turns out to be an opportunity for Singapore. For Hong Kong to go back to normal, I would hope that, Beijing exit COVID policy, realizes that it needs to stay integrated with the rest of the world, that it needs access to global capital markets, because recession might be around the corner, in which case the importance of Hong Kong again sort of goes up in their eyes.
Thank you very much for that, Professor Pushan Dutt. He's Professor of Economics and Political Sciences at INSEAD. Thanks for joining us today.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.